Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. Episode 425 of the Roguecast, recorded July 25th, 2023. Lex Luthor, Slave of the Seas.
Hello and welcome to our post-San Diego version of the Roguecast. Now, none of us went to San Diego.
And where comic creators took it back.
But we did read about it.
Yes, we did.
I kind of wish that I'd been this year. It's been like 14 years since I last went to Comic-Con.
It sounded like a kind of wild and strange ride.
Well, it sounded like it was more like what it used to be when I used to go before Hollywood just took over entirely.
Right.
They were like,
because of
comic creators. Yeah, comic creators made money. Like all the Artist Alley people were talking about how much better it was.
Yeah.
It was still crazy packed. But, yeah. it was the comic show again.
Nobody thought that the actors would go on strike. And
they basically were, you know, per the like guild rules and stuff like that. They weren't allowed to promote anything and do stuff. So
right.
most everybody like doing Hollywood stuff just bailed on San Diego.
And although there were a few, like Star Trek announced some stuff and showed some trailers. And
I don't think anyone will learn this lesson. I think probably the Comic-Con international people will still bring all the Hollywood stuff back next year. They'd be scared
to
not do it.
Those generally are probably bigger money makers,
they still sold out their passes and everything.
That's true.
I think on their end, there was no change. They made their money.
But that's the thing, they had sold on the strength of it being a Comic-Con.
Yeah.
The question is for them,
would
will
people
come back next year if they didn't? If the Hollywood
just
stuff
for
wasn't
the comic stuff?
I absolutely would. I would go again if I knew that was going to be like that next year.
Yeah,
right. San Diego kind of became what it used to be.
I'm not going to stand in line for Hall H for 20 hours. I don't do that. That's when I left. But if it was like a comic con, like because Tom Taylor was there. Tom Taylor's never going to come to a Texas convention. God,
right.
Why would he? I would love to meet Tom
Taylor. He's usually off in the Mystic Outback, right?
He lives in the Outback. He can only get there by coming through Gateway's Bull Roarer.
But he is Australian, right? He's generally
he is
generally over in Australia land.
Yes. I knew where you were going.
He has to,
the
Max.
Yes. In order to get his comics out, he has to give them to the man in the gyrocopter and get past the humongous.
Or go into
a good Road Warrior reference.
Or go into the dream world of the Outback.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. You know, Australia has been fertile ground for some good stories.
Crocodile Dundee alone.
Listen, the original Crocodile Dundee is quite a good movie.
Yeah, how about 2 and 3?
We're not talking about those at the moment.
Also one of the best runs of X-Men. Or actually my favorite run. But
it's a run of X-Men.
I know.
I have a fondness as well, Nick. I don't know that I would call it the best. I don't know if it's in the top 5.
I think it's the one I paid the most attention to.
Yeah, it was easier timing. It's kind of like for Dave's Burn and the Dark Phoenix stuff.
Sure,
and
sure.
For me, the like
it's just
around issue 200 era.
Yeah, I happened to be reading at the time that was objectively the best.
So you say.
More than me on this one.
My point being, creators go to San Diego who don't go to any other cons.
Yeah.
And so it used to be you could, like, meet all the writers and artists and all that kind of thing. But they got kind of shoved into the DC and Marvel booths, and it was always crazy busy. And then, you know, if you wanted to do anything, you had to fight the crowds of people who were just there to watch the movie trailers. And I don't know what it was like this year. I don't know if it was still just, like, crazy on the floor, but it sounded like it had maybe more of the vibe. And I'll be curious to see how this pays off. I would love for smaller conventions to go back to being more about comic books than wrestlers signing autographs.
Yeah.
I get that is what brings people in, like the big
I thought
creator.
That's what like Emerald City was or
Emerald
New York
City
Comic-Con.
Does that. New York is a bit of a mix.
Okay.
I'm sure that basically since Iron Man really kind of like kicked off the Marvel Universe that they, you know, it's like, oh wow, this gives people, you know, now we can promote our movies here and to get people to go to stuff that makes, you know, hundreds of millions.
Right.
But yes, like do the hosts of the convention, I don't know if... Are they seeing that money? Like, are they... Is Hollywood giving them big bucks
to come
promote?
I thought all that money was basically going into the pockets of the actors who are walking out of these... I remember seeing a story about the actors walking out with, like, bags of cash from these photo ops.
Oh, right, right.
And it's this crazy thing. I'm like, yeah, that's good for them. That's great. But
you think the cast of Star Trek Next Generation walk out of whatever convention?
Yes, it was just like bags of cash. It's a crazy thing.
Yep. Jonathan Frakes just walks up with a bag of cash in each hand, straddles a motorcycle in the Riker style.
And drives
just,
away.
And rides off with his feet on the handlebars while his hands...
Dollar bills flying up behind him in cartoonish fashion.
Yeah.
Yes. Riker out! anyway, I guess my point is I was excited to see that my comic creator friends were all having a great time.
Yeah, that's good.
Had a group of friends went out there. And more to the point, what I was leading with was we've got a lot of news to talk about.
It's true.
So I probably shouldn't have gone on this 10-minute tangent about San Diego.
Well, I think it was important that we talked about Australia in fiction.
It is true. It is true that we made sure that we know that what Australia is really like is what you've seen in Road Warrior. And
Crocodile Dundee.
And Crocodile Dundee.
Do we want to quick mention the, like, just a handful of some of the interesting winners of the Eisner Awards?
Well, it's just an interesting note that Tom, the Nightwing, won for Best Ongoing again, I think, second year in a row, third year in a row, which is correct.
I can't remember if Bruno Redondo, but he might have won as Best Artist.
I think he might have, too. Well, the thing is, I'm always wary of awards.
Sure.
Awards are tricky. They're very personal for a lot of people, for me especially. And so I usually am mad at, like, the Emmys and the Oscars and all that kind of thing. And the Eisners are no exception.
Sure.
But them
it's
saying...
It's not as if there's not talent in the mix.
Them saying that Nightwing is the best ongoing series is correct. that has been the best series since it started running, and I have felt that way for a long time. And so I was like, okay, so we're at least on a certain page together.
Then
Tom King had a big day.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. So we're not on the same page all the way.
James Tynion, I think, got
he
best
for something, maybe
writer?
Best writer.
I thought it was just straight up best writer.
I think you may be right.
Best new series was Public Domain by Zdarsky.
That's weird because that wasn't even a series. That thing went into five issues and is still in limbo.
I mean,
those five issues.
Yeah. Best publication for kids, Frizzy one, which I know.
Oh,
we have.
Frizzy's very good. It's actually, we just restocked that. It's on our reading challenge.
Best publication for teens, Daniel Warren Johnson won for Duo Powerbomb.
Okay. Yeah, Daniel Warren Johnson is definitely a guy who's on the rise. I think him doing Transformers is going to be very interesting.
I'm just looking.
So the guy doing Transformers just won an Eisner?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fairly impressive.
It's pretty notable.
Transformers, which hasn't hit yet, y'all, but I think it's hitting like in December or January.
Yeah. Daniel Warren Johnson did November. November is Transformers.
Okay.
Daniel Warren Johnson has had quite the career so far because he's done Duo Powerbomb, before that Murder Falcon.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman Dead Earth. He's a guy who's got a lot of cool... He's a good writer-artist. He's mm-hmm. got a definitive style, yeah. And he does weird stuff.
And Tynion won Best Writer.
Tynion won Best Writer,
because he writes, like, 30,000 books.
But yeah, just, like, but the big good. One, of course, if you for people who don't remember, like, World Tree right now, yep. And his previous claim to fame was... let's see.
World Tree was not included, just to let you know.
Okay.
Because it was from last year.
Yes. I was just really doing that so people
know
who is.
Where is
that?
Something Has Killed the Children.
Nice House on the Lake.
Those are the two biggies.
Yep.
Before that, he had worked on like DC stuff, like Detective Comics and Batman.
Yep.
And so this has definitely been around, and so I'm pleased for him.
Yeah, me too. And I've liked most of what he's written, too.
Best penciler was Greg Smallwood, who did Human Target.
Yeah, well, Greg Smallwood's super talented artist, always has been.
He was carrying that book.
Best cover artist was Bruno Redondo.
Bruno Redondo, best covers. Now, that makes sense. His covers are great.
I knew I'd seen his name in the mix.
Okay.
And, of course, Jordi Belair won for best coloring.
Yeah. It's kind of like there was a period where Dave Stewart, was dominating every year, and now it's Jordi Belair.
So this is a weird one. I would not have thought this.
Yeah?
Best lettering, Stan Sakai.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, good for him, because he's been doing that forever.
But, I mean, that's an odd one. I mean, I would not have guessed the lettering would have, I mean...
He used to like letter Gru the Wanderer, from Sergio Aragonés. Yeah. But like, does he do anything but Usagi now?
Just Usagi.
But he's got like something about his lines.
I mean,
stuff
he's,
like that.
He's one of the guys not doing computer. Everyone's lettering is pretty standardized now, so he's one of the guys doing artistic lettering. Really,
yeah,
kind of makes sense. Or they just wanted to give Sakai an award, which I can get behind that.
I mean,
too.
Maybe so.
Anyway, we mentioned Frizzy. We mentioned our Summer Reader Challenge. Our Summer Reader Challenge is still going. We've got about two more weeks.
Yep.
We still have... There's two more coins. The people have not hit the ten coins.
Ah, okay. So, yes. Yeah, so, like, if your kid makes it and is one of the next two, they're going to get a $10 gift certificate.
Yeah, they get $10
when they come in addition to the little gift bag we've prepared.
Yep. yeah, we had a lot of interest. We haven't had as many turned back. We've only got 8 people turned in so far, so hopefully people are working on their reading challenges and we'll get that in.
Kids read a different rate. It's all good. Just but bring it on in and get cha-chinged.
In terms of games this week, we didn't get a lot of stuff from our main distributors. We did get the Wingspan Nesting Box, which is a big box that you can put all the existing expansions as well as the ones to come. They said it will.
Yeah.
And we did get a restock on Wingspan and all the expansions.
Was this the week that we got Indie Press?
Yes, I was going to mention Indie Press, but I was going to do other stuff first.
You do what you need to do, Randy.
We got the new Micro Macro Crime City. This is the third one of those.
Yep.
Nick, you have played a little bit of that, right?
I have purchased it. I have not played it.
Okay. So this is...
Well, thanks for calling me out.
We talked about this a while back. It's a reminder, Nick, that you have it and you should play it.
I know.
It is a big black and white map, a little bit like Richard Scarry's...
Those kids' books. Kid or if you want to, Where's Waldo?
Yeah.
And but Where's like Waldo. In black and white.
Yeah. But it's got... It's basically... It's got all this stuff that happens on it. It's all
like a cityscape. Like
you're searching for clues,
and they have little envelopes of story clues, and you try to solve crimes by looking for these clues using magnifying glasses and stuff. It's very fun,
right? And kind of a family thing where you can all be kind of like looking at different pieces of art and finding neat little things. Randy, have you played it?
Yes,
I've played. What would be like something that, a clue or something you might find that would be...
Well, there's one like, the one I remember for playing the first time was there's bank robbers, and so you have to find like, you have to see they stole a car, and so you have to look for, they'll find their car and see the money trailing out, so you look like, where's the money trailing out of?
Yeah.
And then they get away using 3 different transports, so you're like, okay, well where are they? Oh, here they are, they're on horses. And then you look for another part of the city, oh, they're jumped on a boat.
Uh-huh.
And so it's like that kind of thing. And it's all there, but there's so much detail, it can easily get lost without you looking for them.
Yeah.
And so you track them back to certain places, and the clue would be something like, you know, they used 3 transports, where are they? They buried the money, where did they bury the money? So you can, like, find the shovels.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that sounds really cool, and, like, something very different, but I think as a kid, I had a little fascination with like little 3D worlds, the kind of the way Richard Scarry or Waldo did, or anybody like that.
Yep.
And so I think I would have loved like looking through these those pieces of art of like massive cityscapes to find the bad guys.
Well, and one of the things that people have said is like once you finish it all, or even before, you could put it in a big frame and have it up on the wall, and just like people could come to your house and play the game. You could have it up on the wall. It's a really cool idea. We got a board game called Trials of Tempest, which is the new WizKids D&D game. It is a cooperative team-based game for 2 to 8 players, where rival parties of heroic adventurers battle to prove their worth and mettle in the ever-changing battle realms of Tempest, God of War.
Okay.
So yeah, you basically...
Cooperative D&D sounds like a good thing.
You use skills and allies to conquer trials, they're never the same, and the guardian that waits you at the end will limit your bravery or cunning. And whoever gets the most victory points in those teams win. Looks like a lot of fun. They have made pretty good games, the WizKids people. We got the Pendragon Starter Set, for those who... It's got an old-school game, right?
This is an RPG. It's Arthurian, right? Knights of the Round Table. I think it goes back to the early or mid-80s, and it was originally used the Chaosium system, same as Call of Cthulhu. Jeez, I'm mixing up stuff. I believe it was always its own system. Sorry, okay. My bad. But it is known for very unique mechanics that really, like, create a sense of, like, kind of a dark medieval time, but also, you know, with some magic, but, like, lighter magic. And what I remember, like, that, you know, they had these notions of, like, kind of, like, from, like, Christianity of, like, the passions that govern you.
Yeah.
And also the codes of chivalry. And I'm not talking, like, movie codes of chivalry, but kind of, like, the real ones.
Mm-hmm.
Those are on your character sheet and, like, have mechanical ways to, like, kind of make you follow them and reward you when you do follow them. And there's, like, just as a random interesting thing about the game, I was telling you about this the other day, Randy. After you generally go, your knight, if you want to play campaigns, has like kind of one major adventure a year, and then you also do what they call the winter phase. Basically, in winter time, all the knights are kind of locked away in their holds, and you know you will kind of rise in power over time. And there's like a sort of almost a little sim sort of game where you manage your castle, you see what your fortunes are, how the crops do, does anybody lay siege to your castle, all that kind of stuff. And you do that during the winter phase, and your character grows over time to the point where you are expected to, you know, probably have your character get married, possibly sire a kid, possibly have that kid in turn become a knight.
Oh,
I think it can, like, jump ahead by sometimes years at a time.
Can you wind up in futuristic cyberpunk Knights of Pendragon?
Nope.
Damn.
Nope, that's beyond its scope. But anyway, I often hear from, like, RPG nerds that, like, as far as, like, handling the theme and making you feel the theme of it, this is one of the best ones.
Okay.
And so, I don't know what the starter box set is, like 20 or 30 bucks or something?
It's pretty cheap.
It's 30 bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good, and, like, if you've got any of the Excalibur, Knights of the Round Table, Arthur kind of fondness, I think this would probably be a really good box set to pick up.
It is Chaosium.
Okay.
Okay, so maybe I guess
they may use a variant of the system then.
Yeah, they originally did it, and then they lost a lot. They sold the license, and then they've reacquired it.
Oh.
Yeah, for some reason, I was thinking at first that it was them, but then I was like, well, wait, all their stuff was Percentile, and what I've seen of Pendragon, which has jumped around in publishers over the years, I thought it was, like, different from that.
Their write-up sounds really interesting on their website. Pendragon is a world of brutal medieval realism that focuses on the emotional impact of play and strives to make players feel as invested, loving, and frightened about their characters as their characters themselves would feel.
Yeah, that sounds right. And
if your character dies, do you die in real life?
I mean, I think they've adopted the Freddy... I forget...
You die in the dream, you die in real life.
Yep.
That's not just Freddy, it's any movie that ever does dreams. Or any story that ever does it.
Right.
I mean, Christopher Nolan did it with...
Yeah. It is not, in fact, true, I believe. You can die in a dream. You won't die in real life.
It's true.
But
the
way things work in my own dreamscapes is that when I am, like, threatened or there's, like, something dangerous, I will pop awake before whatever the threat follows through. Yep. Like, if it's just a few seconds before what would be the point where I die, I pop awake. And I think that's why people have... That's what led to that lore. It's because your body will often jolt you. And you're like, oh, what if it didn't jolt me? I guess I'd die.
Well, that was my fault. I had a good segue from starter set to the next thing, but we went off on dreams. So speaking of dreams and box sets.
Yes.
We got the box set for Dragonbane.
Yes.
Which is a Scandinavian RPG from the 80s.
Yep.
This is reimagined, reinvented.
Yep.
It's now D20, I think. It was always D20, but it's like 5E.
5E, and it's... bought by the guys Free League who do all of the
Alien,
beautiful
Blade Runner,
Vossen.
One Ring, yeah.
It looks gorgeous. And I liked that this one had rules for a solo adventure.
Yeah.
I thought that was a fun idea.
That is cool.
It looks like a really cool starter for like a different brand of fantasy. It's got some art in it. It's got some really beautiful art. Like, you look in the back, it's got that sort of duck rogue you've probably seen online.
Yeah, he's cool looking.
So... here's the thing. Is that, like, an outlier? Is it mostly kind of D&D-ish? Or is it D&D with some sort of wilder elements like
the
Duck Man?
I think there's some wilder elements because they're different races, right? There's like there's a Duck Man and some other stuff. And
yes.
It looked cool.
By the way, the Duck Man looks more like, at least my memory of it, is like looks more like if Frazetta created something like that.
Yes.
Not like not really talking Howard the Duck here.
No, it's much more
painful. He actually looks kind of badass.
Yeah, he does. We got the Dune... Powers and Pawns Emperor's Court sourcebook for the Dune RPG.
Oh, cool.
And it's just kind of cool.
I assume that's like Imperial Intrigue and the Game of Thrones.
Seems like a fun way to play it.
Yep.
And then we got a restock from Foambrain Dice, including a bunch of new big, like the 55mm D20s.
Yes.
Yeah, this is like a big old die D20 the size of your fist.
Yeah, including a couple sharp edge ones with little bubbles inside. They're super cool.
They really look cool. You're going to want to look at these in the case.
Unless they're already gone, because I will buy one of them. Because
Nick is considering buying one, and if he buys one, he may buy all.
Well, my dice always turn on me during the game, so I have to have multiples.
I was saying that it looks like Boba Tea on the inside. They got little bubbles on the inside.
Now I don't want it. I don't like boba tea.
I wanted to drink it. You don't like boba tea?
I don't.
Why? It's good.
Because I don't like the tapioca pearls. It's like this weird...
You can get them without it. But anyway.
Why would you?
But why would
anyway,
you?
Anyway, we also got Monster Pops. That is their new blind bags for the summer. So they are...
This is the stuff that would normally be our little dice bags and stuff.
Yep. So it comes with a D20, a themed D20, and then a little pin that looks like one of those 3D... like a popsicle that's like a monster head, including a Mind Flayer one and a Goblin one. And they're fun.
Wizards should just make Monster Pops. They really should.
They should.
Yeah. I would totally buy them.
Well, they're making Magic Cheez-Its, so...
Oh, that's right. I did see you
Magic the Gathering Cheez-Its, not Cheez-Its full of marijuana.
Good to know. By the way, I have not followed this closely, but this is... basically Wizards of the Coast is actually sponsoring the like little Snap Crackers Cheez-Its.
Yeah, Cheez-Its, yep.
Their own, just like with their branding on it.
Yep.
Like,
and they've done some, I feel like there's some D&D snacks out there,
too. They did do something else. I don't remember what it was.
These Cheez-Its will transport you to another plane.
No, that's the other kind of Cheez-Its with marijuana.
Those
are magic Cheez-Its, not Magic the Gathering Cheez-Its.
Those are magic in quotes Cheez-Its,
yes.
Not Magic the Gathering Cheez-Its.
Yes, yes. Let's talk about indie RPGs, Dave.
Okay, sure.
I want to talk about indie RPGs. We got 16 new ones, as well as a restock and a bunch of them. And I was going to highlight four of them.
Yes. What four, Randy?
So there is one called My Brain is a Stick of Butter.
Uh-huh.
This is a solo game, one of the solo games, about living a week with ADHD and teaching how hard it can be to balance all of the tasks life expects you to do.
That's interesting.
So it's kind of educational, empathy building, but also, I'm sure, pretty funny and weird.
We've talked about, a lot of these games, the indie RPGs. I mean, some of them actually aren't that wild. They may be sort of focused, but they're not that wild. It's like, oh, this is kind of like an anti-fascist Star Wars game. That's not that wild. But, like, some of them are almost a little bit more like what you would think of as, like, improv exercises, for actors. But you don't got to be an actor. And I like some of these. I do like some of the really weird ones. There's a game that's meant to, talk about. God, I'm trying to remember. They have a Viking game that I think intermixes its Viking action with kind of a conceptual thing about toxic masculinity and the outcome of violence and brutality.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's one game. What else you got?
Another one that is a solo or two player called Tangled Blessings that is inspired by Dark Academia Media, Ghost Stories, and Graduate School.
Okay.
So it features a wizarding college, wandering specters, assigned houses, curses, devil's bargains, and a supernatural flavor. You basically are crafting a story of your time at the academy, the strange
method. Somewhere between Harry Potter and the Magicians.
Yeah. You use a tarot card and the book, and you sort of tell a story.
Ah.
It's based on the mechanics are based on the Anamnesis game, which we also carry, which is another journaling solo game.
Mm-hmm.
There is Orbital Blues, which is a space western game, a lo-fi space western role-playing game that is a love letter to Cowboy Bebop, Firefly, Guardians of the Galaxy kind of thing, and has a really cool, like, 50s sci-fi aesthetic to it.
Yeah, I remember that one. A lot of times, by the way, the packaging on these is a lot of fun.
Yeah. The aesthetics is half the fun in a lot of this.
Totally.
And then I want to mention Moonlight on Roseville Beach, which is a queer game of disco and cosmic horror.
Yep, as I understand, is it lesbian specific?
I believe you are lesbian detectives, yes.
Yeah, lesbian detectives on a gaycation.
Yep.
With everything, it sounds like it could veer anything from like sort of Scooby-Doo to Lovecraftian to sort of fighting the forces of capitalism.
You play the amateur sleuth protecting this 1979 queer beach town from cosmic horrors, vindictive necromancer, fantastical beasts, and conservative politicians.
It sounds so good.
Yeah, it looks like a ton of fun.
The cover, by the way, looks like an old pulp novel cover, like a sort of lurid thing.
Yeah.
But it's got like the kind of like sexy, cute, like it's like almost like housewife chic, as I recall, going on. Anyway, super fun, and that's just a small sampling.
Yeah, we've got a ton more.
Ton more, and you just got to start looking through these games. You will find something cool in there, and including with solo games are back, like you said.
Yep.
And a lot of those sort of take the form of journaling, or there's a little bit of sometimes a like sim elements of like running the tavern in that one D&D one. So yeah, just check out our section. There's a reason why it's become so popular for us.
All right, let's talk about comics for the last week of July, July 26th. And let's kick off with DC's big new issue this week. DC, of course, has Night Terrors.
Yep.
There's, I think, like six more stories, new number ones.
Yeah, plus the number
plus Night
two.
Terrors number two, the main series.
Yep.
There's some new character introduced, and we don't know what her deal is, but it's like, was it called Angel Breaker or something?
Angel Breaker is correct, yeah.
Yeah, I'm have sure. no idea what that character
she
is.
She breaks angels.
But, like, is this going to be a character who will weave into the DC universe beyond this? I bet so. I bet that's the plan.
I bet it's one of Insomnia's Sleepless Nights.
I mean, that's a cool idea. If you had some sort of a... maybe she will turn on Insomnia that's and
possible.
Become like a heroic nightmare monster, but I think that's a cool idea.
I don't know.
I'm enjoying the main series.
I'd hire that character in my JSA or Outsiders team.
And then we have the new, it's sort of in the Black Label format. It is a Black Label, so it's outside of continuity. And that just means it's like big oversized. It's Superman, The Last Days of Lex Luthor by Mark Waid and Brian Hitch.
Yep.
And the pitch on this is Lex Luthor is dying and he asks Superman to save him.
Yes.
This is, you know, for anybody who, like, I'm going to say, watched Smallville or has just always been intrigued by their enemies / frenemies status, this is kind of an exploration of that and, you know, what Superman will... how good is Superman? Yep. Just what? How much empathy will he extend? Brian Hitch is there to kind of give it that big widescreen look of his old the Authority or Ultimates days.
I thought Waid had a good handle on Superman just in general. And...
I mean, he's been writing him in what, World's Finest or the name of the Batman Superman book?
Batman Superman,
right?
World's Finest.
And then way back, like 10, 12, 15 years ago, he did a Superman origin story thing. What was that one called?
Birthright.
Superman Birthright.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I weirdly liked this the scenes in Smallville in this one. I think that was like what won me over in a lot of ways.
After the initial setup, I guess, to kind of give it the texture of the to give it some nuance, you're like, why is he helping out Luther? This guy's a big jerk face.
Right.
And you're like, oh, because they have something, they have a thing that goes back to, you know, back to Smallville, a connection and a bond, and Superman is clearly going to hold on to that. But then specifically, it seems like Waid wants to illustrate it.
I can never remember why Luther was in Smallville. Was it because, like, his father was, like, building, like, a factory or a plant nearby?
I don't know. Like, there's different bits of lore. That was, you know, in what do you call it? Smallville is because Lionel Luther had, like, a fertilizer plant.
Yeah.
And it was just one piece of his empire. But I think he lived there. And so it'd be like if some... You know, Elon Musk or whatever lived in Smallville.
Right.
You know, and had a son who might not turn into a piece of shit. But oops, he did.
Oops, he did.
Oops, all Luthers. there was something else I was going to say about that. Oh, I noticed, you know, back in the day in, like, the Silver Age of comics, Luther, like, had done some experiment in Smallville, and, like, a fire started, and Superboy... In those days, Superboy was around.
Yeah.
Blew out, like, the fire, and the chemical thing, like, kind of hit Luther, and it made his hair fall out.
Yep.
And that was one of the reasons he hated Superboy, for making him go bald, because he made a chemical experiment that went bad.
Prematurely bald.
But that scene is briefly appears in this, or at least a version of it that's considerably more messed up. I'm just going to quick describe it. He's, like, in what looks like some sort of locked room that had a... Where the experiment was taking place.
Yeah.
And Clark is trying to get in. And I know he has some of his powers at that point, but maybe not enough. And you see it's, like, on fire inside. And it looks like it's actually starting to consume Luther. So I think he actually is going to lose his hair. It's just not going to be, like, in a campy way.
Yeah.
But he's, like, got this sort of manic or insane grin on his face. And it's clear he will not open the door. Whatever reason, he's mad at Clark. He's like, I'm going to burn in here. And it was very intense. But overall, this is kind of a classic heroic Superman. It is not a Black Label book where Superman punches through heads or swears, which is what happens in some other Black Label books.
Sure.
It is more of a big sprawling Superman story.
I thought Hitch does a really good job.
Yeah. I'll be curious to see where they want to take it, because it is Black Label, they could do anything they want with it. Luther could die in this. They don't have to worry about continuity. Superman could die trying to save him. Maybe he dies trying to save him and turns Luther into a good guy. Maybe he dies trying to save him and Luther goes back to working the fertilizer plant.
Maybe Luther turns into an octopus.
Maybe that's a thing that could happen. Anything. And then he becomes Aquaman's slave of the seas.
Yes. In the sequel.
That's probably
Aquaman,
the most...
Aquaman, Lex Luthor's slave of the seas.
I think that's probably the most likely thing.
I do too. I mean, I'm putting my money on
that. You know how sometimes it's unfortunate, but when you speculate, you accidentally hit what's obviously going to be the answer, and it's disappointing.
We've ruined it for everyone.
Now they can't live up to it. We all know he's going to end up.
When he turns into an octopus, you're all going to be like,
slave.
Of course, this is what happened.
Russell, I'm sorry.
All right, we also have. Another kind of unexpected one is an AWA book called Ribbon Queen.
Oh, yeah.
Which I didn't get a chance to read, but both of y'all seem to enjoy.
Yeah, it's this...
I was going to say, this is Garth Ennis and artist Jason Burroughs doing sort of a...
Oh, Jason Burroughs from the Avatar days.
Yeah. He worked on some of the stuff with Alan Moore that was like the Lovecraftian material.
Yep.
And he might have done some crossed stuff with Garth Ennis as well.
That would track. That's probably where they knew each other.
But although he, I mean, this is really good work.
He is
from
a very talented artist who works in what I think of Nick as somewhat the European style, which is to say, not a ton of heavy shading, but a lot of detail.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting story. I cannot quite tell what all of its elements are, but at its heart is a story about a possible murder that might be attributable to a police officer
and
who
sort of
is otherwise thought of as a hero cop.
Right, like kind of the force's golden boy in
a
lot of ways.
He was like, I think during the worst PR for them, like during like Black Lives Matter, which this touches on in a very overt way, during that he like on camera somehow like saved a hostage somewhere and it became like this big story that they celebrated. And so the put upon police commissioner is kind of hearing about this and he's like, please don't tell me anymore.
Right. I thought that was both the most cartoonish and most kind of like realistic.
He likes to do his sad sack characters.
Yes.
And but it's mostly treated kind of realistically. It's not too over the top for him.
Well, I thought the main character who is this,
the woman,
not young female, she's like a female investigator, and she's kind of put upon trying to kind of, she starts getting all this all these clues and information about this guy, and it's just, it's interesting in the places it goes.
It's true. According to the afterword from Garth Ennis, which is interesting and worth reading, the backdrop of it is going to be both the dealing with the backlash, he said, against Black Lives Matter and the Me Too movement. And I don't know, you know, where he's going to take that. I, you know, like to hope, and I'm pretty sure Ennis has always been, for all that he's kind of a man's man in some ways, he's also a progressive dude.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious to what his exact thoughts are going to be. And then there is, like, suddenly something kind of supernatural in this.
Yeah.
I don't want to say what it is, but it's pretty startling.
It is. And Jason Burroughs draws a hell of it. Like, he drew creepy fish people in, what was that, Alan Moore? What was the...
Something with a P.
Yeah.
Not Pandora, but whatever it was.
Yeah, I can't remember, but it was very Cthulhu.
It was disturbing.
Yeah.
this is just as disturbing.
Yeah, Ribbon Queen, and the title of it, even in the first issue, is something of a mystery, but you will definitely start to understand part of where it comes from.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. It was an interesting first issue.
Yeah, I agree.
We got going in a very different direction. Image has a new book called Per Evil, which is Merk Andolfo of Unnatural.
Right, it's per, like as in cats purring,
purr,
but
yes.
It's meant to be a play on like pure evil, but it's per evil.
And it is, I guess, a little more violent than her usual thing.
It has some moments of surprising violence. What's weird is like, Per Evil sounds like it should be a cat comic,
yep.
But it is about a mother and a daughter primarily.
Okay.
And I didn't read it yet, so I don't know exactly how it plays out, but it seems like there's some weird stuff going on. There's a bit of surrealism, and there is some weird little bits of ultraviolence that wouldn't be out of place in a Garth Ennis comic.
Correct.
But I believe the intention is to focus on the mother-daughter relationship, and it's not just like a traditional mom. She kind of looks like she's like a little bit of a hipster mom. She's got like kind of the chic haircut and look, but I really can't say much about it. Merk Andolfo, anybody who read Unnatural know that it took some interesting swerves, and I suspect this may do some of the same kind of things, but she's not drawing it, but the artist is very good.
Mm-hmm.
She seems to like work with good artists.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're looking for something a little bit different, definitely worth a flip through.
Marvel's got the second issue of their What If series, What If Dark. This is a Spider-Gwen that is co-written by Jody Hauser, modern writer, and Jerry Conway, who wrote a lot of Spidey, including the original Death of Gwen Stacy, the original Clone Saga.
Yep.
And gets to revisit it here in a What If of, like, basically, Jerry Conway is credited as plotting, and Jody Hauser did the script. So I imagine there's what they asked him, like, hey, what would you have done if Gwen hadn't died and Peter did instead?
Yeah.
It is interesting. I found it, I really enjoyed it. I think of all of us, I enjoyed it the most. It is very old school.
Yeah.
But I thought it was an interesting riff. I've read a lot of Jerry Conway Spider-Man, And so I kind of like this idea of like another world.
In I think we have determined from this that, and based on the previous one, which I think you're about to mention, you also
what
like
if Loki was by Dark was by Walt Simonson.
That they're kind of bringing in their old school dudes, some of the legends, honestly, not just old school but legends, to get their shot. Probably some of them are going to be working with co-writers, but yeah, it seems like they're doing a pretty good job of it.
There is a sequel to the Batman Beyond. Was called Gothic or something like that? Whatever
it's called, it was Batman Beyond Neo Year.
This is called Neo Gothic.
Yes,
it is by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lanzig, the new writing team. They are doing, among other things, Guardians of the Galaxy, Captain America, and I feel like a few other things.
Yeah,
this is them doing a new Batman Beyond miniseries. People like the Batman Beyond, and so I thought it was worth noting.
Yeah, one of them Terry McGinnis fans.
And then we had Hellfire Gala number one, which brings Miss Marvel into the X-Men fold.
Yep. And starts the Fall of the Mutants.
And starts the Fall of the Mutants in earnest.
Right. It broadly does do some of the things we expect it to do, but in kind of different ways. And it definitely has some swerves all of its own.
Yeah.
That have nothing to do with Miss Marvel. But I would say, if nothing else, this is a pretty important issue, it seems like, for Fall of the Mutants. A lot of things have said, like, this is a precursor, this is a prelude. Well, this feels like the real deal.
Yeah.
We have Alice Ever After, or is it Never After?
Alice Never After. Yeah, I think a sequel to Alice Ever After.
Yep, which is a sort of a weird Victorian drug thing or something it starts as.
I mean, it is definitely like, it is Alice in Wonderland exactly as it was like, or I mean, it is meant to look at least, like the way I think John Tenniel, I think, was the guy who drew the original stuff. But I do know it is meant to be a kind of a dark and gothic version, but like, as I'm looking at it, it's weird, but it's not like... It's not super weird. I can't quite... Yeah. I haven't read it yet, so I don't know what the deal is. But, like, it is like you are stepping into the illustrations of the book, and I know it is, like, kind of trippy and psychedelic and dark, but it is not like, say, American McGee's Alice, the video game that everybody kind of knew years and years back.
Yeah,
I wish I could say more on it, but I can definitely say the art is amazing in it. Like, it's really good. I can't even quite think of what to compare it with. It'd almost be like if Dan Mora was doing it or something.
Yeah.
There's a level of elaborate depth in the character's facial expressions. But also, this person clearly loves drawing all the creatures, you know, the caterpillar and Mad Hatter and all that stuff. I suspect it would probably help to have read the previous Alice miniseries, which I think we have the trade of.
Yep. We have a new issue of Avengers, Jed McKay's Avengers, which I know we've all been enjoying. This introduces his first, like, big bad villains.
Yep.
A bunch of new villains, and has the Avengers starting to go up against them.
And a kind of a neat scene that where they have a split over kind of whether to, like, kind of move fast and strike hard or pause a bit at maybe risk some people a little bit but and do some planning. And it's a good convo. I liked it. And the plan they come up with is pretty cool.
And then we got a couple big second issues this week. We've got Incredible Hulk number 2, which continues the new, like, Monster Hulk run.
Right.
And then Ultimate Invasion number 2, which is more of, like, the first issue was very much about the Maker, the sort of evil Reed Richards.
Mm-hmm.
And this is sort of the start of what his plan is and his recreated Ultimate Universe. It's got the sort of big ideas you're used to from Hickman.
Yep. Seems like it has some of him tinkering with reality in interesting ways, so you will see some... alternate versions of heroes and stuff.
Yeah. And then there are a few books that ended this week. Disney's villain Scar comes to a conclusion. The Hallows Eve miniseries. Boom's The Seasons Have Teeth. And the TMNT Usagi Yojimbo all wrap up this week.
As does She-Hulk by Rainbow Rowell.
As does She-Hulk, yeah.
Although that we know that that's going to spin off into another book.
And I forgot Berserker.
Yeah, that's the Keanu Reeves kind of Immortal Warrior comic.
This one is called Berserker Poetry of Madness.
Poetry of Madness.
And this is about him...
Something to do with Atlantis.
Saving Atlantis.
Yeah, I don't know... So I have not been keeping up with this.
Me neither. I know he's an immortal warrior, and therefore this is like probably an older story of his.
However, it's beautifully illustrated by Steve Scroach.
Yeah. Designs for The Matrix.
I mean, they've had good artists on it before. Ron Garney was doing it before, and it was like his career peak work. And this is very good stuff from Steve Scroach. It kind of has some of that hyper-violence... kind of the character he's playing, which is I think called B, is in like some armor that I can only say looks like the Dracula armor from Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula.
Yeah,
it looks pretty dope. But yeah, if you've been following that, I think you probably want to. That's another one where you probably want to pick up the original trade first, but you know, they probably made this standalone too.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we come back and talk about a whole bunch of trailers and some news out of San Diego Comic-Con. All right, so we are going to be talking about a bunch of trailers.
Yes.
And then a little bit of news that we picked up on. Let's start. I'm going in reverse order here. So let's start with the Marvels trailer, which we just finished watching.
Yes.
We've talked about the original, the previous one.
Yeah.
And I am, for those who don't know, super excited about this movie because Monica Rambeau is one of my all-time favorite characters. Mm-hmm. And Kamala Khan is one of my new favorite characters. And I like Carol just fine.
I like the titular character.
I like her okay. but... really, to me, this is Kamala Khan's movie, and I love her getting to do her fangirl thing alongside her heroes, which is super cool.
I don't remember if they had, like, sort of spelled it out in the previous trailer as they do in this one, but I guess the deal is, well, so who's the bad guy lady?
The bad guy lady is some Kree lady. Dar Ben, I don't know the name.
She said, "You took everything from me," which is a thing that bad guys say a lot.
Well, I think Carol Danvers, like... Destroyed the Kree Empire. In a lot of
ways.
She's
like, I was about to get a job with the Kree Empire.
Oh,
well, it looked like she was an accuser.
So she was one of the emperors of the Kree during Operation Galactic Storm in the comics.
Interesting, okay.
And she was killed by Kalasinera.
Of course.
Sure, Gazuntai. Yeah.
So she appeared in the 1990s, created by Ron Mars and Ron Lim during the Silver Surfer series.
Oh, wow.
So it's originally a man, a disenfranchised general serving in the Kree Army. One of the things I think is interesting that Captain Marvel did is that they made the Kree Supreme Intelligence was sort of femme, the way she was presented was as a femme. And so the notion of like a sort of a strong female villains to go up against a female hero is interesting.
This is the ultimate in equality is you get to be the bad person too.
Yeah, but it sounds like maybe she was a former accuser.
And in some way, she does something that links the sort of light-themed powers of the heroes.
Yep.
Entangles them.
So that it seems like when they use their powers...
They swap places,
which is going to be, like, lots of crazy visual fun.
Yep.
What was it? There is a bit at the... I think, is it at the end of Thor Dark World... Which is one of the few fun kind of bits in that where there's like a lot of teleporting kind of wild power use and stuff like that. It feels like they kind of wanted to pull some of that sort of energy and you know, hopefully in a better movie. And also I think, you know, it's going to be about this unusual grouping of friends, the fangirl, her hero, you know, self-made sort of Monica Rambeau.
Yep.
And she got her powers in WandaVision.
Yeah,
right?
She did. And what'll be interesting is when last we saw Carol interacting with Monica, Monica was a little girl.
Yep. Right.
And she like called her Lieutenant Trouble. Like they like Monica's the one who gave her colors for her costume.
Right.
So it's gonna be interesting seeing her interact with her as an adult.
They have not met since in the
not
stories.
On screen. Now they may have off screen, but
and is the reason is Carol's powers, or is that what's making her stay so youngish?
Yes.
She doesn't seem to have aged too hard.
Yeah, I think her powers keep her young.
Okay, cool.
Which is going to be tricky when the actor starts aging.
You know.
Well, maybe not. No, she'll be replaced by AI by that point.
That's right. We'll all be replaced by AI
at
that point.
This whole podcast
will just watch AI movies and be like, good job, AI.
And then we'll make AI podcasts that only AIs listen to.
And then they're going to create AIs that take away the job from AIs.
Yes. Those AIs took our jobs.
Get them, AI.
it is a fun trailer. They continue to use, in this case, a remix and reorchestration of...
Intergalactic
from the Beastie Boys, one of my favorites from them. The early 90s or mid 90s, and a good call for cosmic powered people.
Yeah.
Some fun stuff with Fury and Goose. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm excited to see it. The trailers are good. It's one of those things where, like, I wish they didn't make more trailers because I have to watch them when they come out, and the more I know, the less happy I'm going to be. But
we should stop watching them.
It doesn't matter. People are going to talk about them and make memes about them. So I'd rather, if they're going to make the trailer, I want to watch the trailer.
Randy must witness the flirking.
Yeah, I witnessed the flirking. But it looks good. I'm a little annoyed that they got moved all the way to November. But at least it is still going to be this year, so that's good. Unless they decide to move everything because of the writers and actors.
I mean, everything is in flux right now.
Yep. We saw the trailer for Spider-Man 2, which is a PlayStation 5 exclusive game.
Yep.
Yep. And Randy, I believe you're the only one at this table who's played it. I've got it, but because I got frustrated with the opening Kingpin training level.
Oh, no.
Back when.
I played it and beat the original.
Oh, so Nick's played through it all, too.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought you hadn't played it.
No, no. That was on PS4.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I thought it was a great game.
You're the only one who hasn't played it.
Okay. You seem to have zero interest, and I thought if you liked it, you would have had some interest.
Well, I have interest, but I'm not going to spend $500 to get a PS5.
Nick's not a console gamer as much anymore.
Yeah, it's true. He fell out of doing that.
And so did I.
You know why? Because he's afraid of Mario.
I am also afraid of... Actually, I'm afraid of Donkey Kong.
I'm afraid of Wario, not Mario.
Given game, he could pop up and scare Nick.
Afraid that if I open up Luigi's Haunted Mansion, it will haunt my house.
Yes, well, Waluigi will come out of it.
Waluigi will come out of it. No, I've kind of got off console gaming, too. I don't play as many games as I used to, but...
I play a lot of console games, but I also... The system buy-in is a lot, and I'm not sure... But this is, like, a really good trailer, I feel like.
It's a great trailer.
It's a story trailer, basically.
And the thing is, Spider-Man, the original game, and I'm sure Spider-Man 2, Miles Morales was the same way, the gameplay is great. I mean, there's web-swinging and all the gear up and all that kind of stuff. But what really got me about Spider-Man was the story. It was one of the better Spider-Man stories I've seen.
Yeah, it was a good rethink.
And it was another one of those where they rebuilt the mythology, you know, moved the characters around a little bit, had new interpretations of... Oh, I don't know, MJ, Kurt Connors, a lot of characters.
MJ in particular, Doc Ock especially.
Yep.
They did their Sinister Six in there. Yeah. This is going to bring in Harry Osborn.
Right.
And it has...
Craven is a major villain.
So Miles was introduced in the Spider-Man game.
Yep.
And then he had his own game.
Yeah, the sense of history in when he's talking to Pete. Just the sense that they've been working together for a while.
Well, and this is the first time we're seeing this. Like
they said, 10 years have passed.
Yes, they have not interacted much in the game yet. So that's going to be a built-in relationship, and you get to play both, I'm sure.
Yeah,
it is only one player though, so you probably swap out as they tell a story.
Yeah,
which they did in the first game too.
Or they may have something where it's like you have an option to play whichever one you want at a given time.
I thought it was really cool in the first game where you got to play as MJ.
Yeah, that was fun. I'm sure there'll be a level like that in this one, too. But
does she have any powers in it?
No. Nope.
She's just doing, like,
investigative journalist.
Cool. Unlike the comics choices lately,
jackpot.
Where they're going to try and give her powers, which nobody wants that
nobody
from MJ.
Wants. Nope.
Everybody knows that MJ is, like, the coolest person you could know who doesn't have powers.
Yeah.
Let her be a person who doesn't have powers.
Yep.
But anyway, the games get it, so...
Yeah, but this... So, it looks like there's a Kraven, quite possibly a Grizzly.
Yep. One of the weaker Spider-Man villains, but as rethought for a game, could be a lot of fun.
Yep, he has, like, an axe.
Yep.
And a Grizzly head. It looks like they're gonna do Venom. They have said
for
that
sure.
It's not Eddie Brock. I'm guessing based on this trailer it's Harry.
Probably so.
But Harry is prominently featured in this.
But it looks like they're gonna do the Black Costume Saga where Pete gets taken over by the symbiote and Miles has to deal with it, which is a twist we've not seen. Yeah.
So some portions of the game probably Pete will not be available to play because you're gonna be fighting him because you're gonna be Miles trying to stop him.
Unless you're playing as Venom.
Right. I mean, they could do something like that. That'd be kind of fun too.
Yeah.
Anyway, I keep going back and forth on whether or not I can afford justify getting a PS5 just for this game. And I know, like, my son plays console games sometimes still, although he's mostly on computers now too. I'm like, this will probably be a Spider-Man 2 machine if I get it. Like, I won't probably play anything else. But
so let me just throw out an idea since we're all wavering on this.
Let's all
pony up $200 and we each get it a month at a time.
Yes.
That never works out well.
No, it's perfect. It's perfect.
Who gets it the
now,
first month?
Now, by the way, the one that I got for us is cursed.
Oh.
Supposedly. But I think it's okay.
Well, they're doing a limited Spider-Man bundle. It comes with the Spider-Man like shell and controllers. And I have a feeling that's what's going to finally get me.
When you open it, it just sprays webbing all over your face.
Sure.
Oh, God.
Anyway, I'm super excited for this. If nothing else, this will be the first game I ever watch, like, on YouTube and watch it through, so I can watch the whole story.
It looks cool.
It looks very cool. Let's talk about Invincible Season 2, which opens with a very meta... Some of you thought this would never happen.
Is that like a graduation speech?
Well, yeah.
It's been 2 years.
It's been 2 years. And this has been maybe the most successful I've seen of transferring people from a other media property into reading the comics.
Walking Dead did pretty good.
It did, but that's true. Invincible sales have just skyrocketed.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's very true.
And it was like, once it happened, the comic was done.
Yeah.
So those are just like, yep, just jump right in and start begin the 28 volume or whatever it is.
Three compendiums.
And so that's pretty impressive. This is more a little bit more of a teaser trailer than a full trailer.
It's showing the voice cast.
It's showing the voice cast and just some very brief glimpses of the characters. It's like, oh, his dad is in it.
We knew that.
I mean, this is about
Cullen, though. Optimus Prime himself is playing another. What are they called?
Viltrumite,
or is it?
Yeah.
However you say their name.
Yeah. This is all about Kirkman getting all these people to voice his characters. Yeah. And you know what? I'm here for it.
Good for him.
I really enjoyed the first season of Invincible, and they dropped an Adam Eve mini episode. Actually, not mini.
It's like 40 minutes.
It was a 50 minute long episode that was very, very good.
Let me just ask, I don't know if this how regularly this intersects with her life. Does anybody get their head punched through?
Yes, all the time.
I mean, there are.
Or is Adam and
there
Eve,
are
Adam
some
Eve story a little different?
I mean, it's different, but it's still horrific.
Yeah.
but not in a way that I thought was like oppressively like horrible.
Merely a leg torn off and used to beat somebody to death.
the action though is amazing.
Not to be too much of a think about the children, but as I watch this and there's a trailer for a boys spinoff,
yep,
I am thinking of like, you know, what are the kids who are growing up on superheroes and who don't read comics but only watch the media, and they're going to like see Invincible and they're going to see the boys and stuff, and I'm going to be like, oh no, this is not good.
Dave, this is maybe like kind of like we were talking about earlier with Alan Moore having a lot to answer for. They may have a lot to answer for.
Listen, Alan Moore was just running with what they did with Hard Traveling Heroes and the death of Gwen Stacy and what do you call it? Speedy becoming a heroin
so
addict.
You're saying
in the 70s.
Denny O'Neill is to blame.
Denny O'Neill, but didn't Conway. Like Jerry Conway. I thought Stan Lee wrote that one.
No, I think Jerry Conway did the original.
Okay, then so let's take it back and let's blame Jerry Conway.
How about let's go back to Jim? Blame Stan Lee.
He did come up with Angsty Heroes.
It's true.
Before they were just all True Blue heroes.
Maybe we should blame Jack Kirby.
Maybe we should blame whoever created Zorro. Maybe we should blame whoever created Robin Hood. That is how this would go.
Yes, yes.
But no, I'm just like, geez, I hope kids get some positive examples of superheroes and not just all head punching.
I mean, there's the whole MCU. There are like 25 movies.
Good catch.
And I will defend Invincible because there are some good thematics that actually promote like decency and stuff throughout. There are punctuated with head explosions. Punching,
that's what the kids are going to be there for.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. That's just our society.
I soured on Invincible, even though I watched the first season through. I will probably at least give this a try. I think there's stuff I really like in it, and there's stuff I really don't. And the ultraviolence is almost just like too much for me. And I love ultraviolence. Give me a movie, but
The Boys is ultraviolent.
And okay, so let's talk about The Boys and Gen V.
Yeah,
The Boys should not work for me. I don't like the comics.
I never finished reading the comics. I think I read the first
but
like couple
I think
volumes.
Eric Kripke is a guy who's able to get what works and what's funny about
yes.
it. And even though all his heroes are ultraviolent in it
and awful,
there's something about like he understands that there's a difference between just nihilism and like doing a violent story that's about different morality. And I think Invincible doesn't always get there, but The Boys generally does. It's all in execution. And by that, I don't mean executing people by punching their heads off.
I will say that, but I will also say that I think a lot of people don't see the nuance.
Yeah.
That they just see the ultraviolence and that's what they care about.
I mean, in fairness, Invincible does not have anyone with a prehensile dick. That I know of.
That's true.
I
mean, they talk about dick explosion in this trailer for Gen V.
Yeah, so Gen V is another thing we saw the trailer for, and this is the spinoff of The Boys that is takes place at the Academy where the corporation...
Is this like the R-rated superhero high, or what was the one that Disney did? Sky High.
Yeah. They're, I mean, these are all kids at this. They all superpowers. They come. They're teenagers, not kids.
Right.
But they go to the superpower training academy,
and
it's going to be
Titans.
A little bit of the... Jennifer Lawrence's thing. A Hunger Games style, like kids being, in this...
Exercises and training stuff.
But also along with that, a sort of celebrity culture thing. It's like kids being turned, like Kardashian style a little bit too.
Right.
Yeah.
And then mix in the superhero genre.
Yeah, it looks... like it shouldn't work, but it'll probably be good.
I think that's part of why The Boys works for me. The Boys is also about sort of celebrity culture and mocking and commenting on that. Whereas Invincible is all superhero nods, and it's very much in the superhero genre.
Yeah.
And I think that lack of the like over the top celebrity aspect of it is what separates it from The Boys for me.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that is where I'm like it doesn't. This is Invincible is supposed to feel like a superhero comic.
Yeah,
but it's like what if superheroes violent, and The Boys is like celebrity culture mixed with superheroes. It's more of a genre mashup. I think that's where the line is for me. I think.
Yeah, for me, Invincible is Kirkman's best book that he's ever written
until Void Rivals, that you all love.
I do really enjoy
those
Void
two
Rivals.
Issues. Have been the greatest times I've ever had in my life.
But he really stuck the landing with Invincible, and yeah. I was kind of surprised by it.
Well,
so.
When the Void Rival animated or live action series starts in 15 years, and we start selling more Void Rivals, I'll become a big fan.
I will know that he has arrived when they do Void Rivals toys.
Enter the Skuxoid.
I can see that.
I would like. I'm sure people would enjoy Skuxoid.
I mean, Kirkman's made Invincible toys, so it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, but they're
me.
Not good.
Yeah, well. That's
technicality.
That's brutal, Nick.
I mean, they're not. They're put out by Diamond.
We saw the trailer for Star Trek Subspace Rhapsody. This is a trailer for the musical episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
Yes,
that is going to be in about 2 weeks.
Which, yes, there is going to be a musical episode of Strange New Worlds. We just found out about it.
And there are two kinds of people in this world. There's the people who looked at this trailer as if it was the worst thing they've ever seen in their lives.
Yep.
And there's people like me who are just gleefully giddy about this.
I think there's a middle of the road, because I was watching this and my wife walked in and she's like kind of befuddled by it. She's like, Star Trek musical? I was
that's,
like,
I mean, that's it's unusual. Closer, it's closer to the line of the people who are horrified by it.
I think it looks amazing.
It's unusual. Star Trek has never done it, so this is the first shot that they've had at it. This is a very much a teaser trailer, so it's hard to make a whole lot about it. But they do have like a, you know, the opening theme of Star Trek from the original series. They have like an a cappella version of that.
Yep.
More artfully done than what I just did, and it does look like. There, in true Trek tradition, some sort of energy wave or something is going to pass through the ship, and possibly with more detail later, possibly not, I don't know, that is going to turn the ship into a big crazy musical, where people are like not just singing but doing dance numbers and everything.
Yep.
The only person
they're going full they're, Ferris Bueller.
The only people I see Ferris Bueller.
Their dance sequence musical.
Oh, right, yeah.
But the only people we, I think, overtly saw singing in it were Chapel.
Yeah.
It looks like
Uhura.
And Uhura. And we all saw other people, like, dancing in the corridors and stuff like that. And, you know, again, choreographed looking. There is a shot of the exterior of the Enterprise and a Klingon ship, and I'm like, I think they're essentially tandem dancing with each other, or they're, like, both spinning in sync.
I need Anson Mount to sing.
I'm pretty sure he's gonna. Pretty sure he's gonna. Not quite enough for me to get a full impression of like what its vibe is gonna be or what the story is, but it looked fun. Definitely had an upbeat vibe.
Yeah.
And they were using fonts and titles and stuff that looked like 50s musicals.
Yeah.
The gold standard is Buffy the Musical.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
could see them. There was a bit with Chapel and Spock, and I could see them doing the same thing Buffy did, where they kind of move some stories forward using the musical. Which would be
the idea. It looked like Chapel and Spock in bed.
Yeah.
There may be actually some big developments in this, which I think is a kind of a neat way to do it, and that Whedon did pioneer that. And so, you know, that is to say, it's not just a throwaway fluff show. It's actually an episode where something happens.
Yep.
I think we're all excited for it, and in about 2 weeks we'll know.
Yeah. Alright, let's talk about the last three trailers, which are increasingly weird.
Yes.
There's the Exorcist Believer trailer, which seems to be a sequel to The Exorcist.
Correct.
Now, I know they've done Exorcist
Multiple.
2 and 3
yes.
and that kind of thing.
Right.
But this
and
is like
a TV show.
This is like a modern two girls get possessed in the woods, and I chose the... I don't know.
Yes, it looks like two girls are possessed. The father's played by Leslie Odom Jr.
Yeah, yeah.
And it looks like
father should be played by Leslie Nielsen.
Well, that'd be tricky.
Get out of her, devil!
AI-less than you.
No!
But it also looks like this is potentially... What's the demon's name?
Pazuzu.
The same demon from The Exorcist.
Yes, yeah, so it looks like the same...
Is that Ellen Burstyn?
It was Ellen Burstyn, who played the mom in the original, who apparently...
Watch out, Pazuzu. She's bursting with energy.
Well, it looks like she wrote, like, a book on a possession, and probably has been, like, shunned, yeah. Like, no... She's no longer probably the Hollywood socialite, and I would
That's
imagine.
That's right. I forgot that was her whole deal.
Oh yeah, it
was
a
like
huge
a
thing.
Big actress. She would be the equivalent of like a Julia Roberts, in her heyday.
But it also looks like it harkens back to
this did kind of was at least part of the premise on the TV show, which had Gina Davis as I think you found out was the grown up.
She was
Regan.
Yeah.
Though you didn't find that out until a little ways into the first season, but she had been, like, kind of pilloried on, like, talk shows and stuff like that, or, like, everybody thought she was kind of, like, a fraud, or, like, you know, had been, like, I think kind of manipulated by people, and so she had changed her name and gotten out of the spotlight.
Yeah.
So they've at least touched on the idea of her kind of coming out of hiding before...
And it also looks like there's a little bit of medical horror in this, because that was definitely prominent in the original. And, I thought it was kind of a unique idea to do kind of a tandem possession. I don't know if I've seen that done in this sort of way.
When we were watching it, and I said it looked a little conventional, I don't mean to say that I feel like I've seen this precise story before, but I felt like the scares and the weird voices on the girls and kind of like the sort of the camera doing that staccato flickering and stuff like that. Was stuff that I've seen in a fair number of horror trailers.
Well, this is directed by David Gordon Green, who is the guy behind the Halloween, the movies.
The new ones?
Yeah, the new ones.
Huh. That's interesting, because people started out kind of, like, really into those, and then kind of by the end, a lot of people had turned on them.
Well, they made some interesting decisions that people were not super fond of.
Each movie seemed to get successively more pillory.
I kind of liked them for them not doing the usual thing. I certainly
liked parts of those. I'm not particularly in excited about this one. I do think, for me, The Exorcist is a one-movie thing.
Yeah.
I like the show, actually, quite a bit. But I didn't finish it, so...
Well, it got canceled, so...
I don't know if they were able to reach any sort of conclusions.
I don't think they were.
I'm looking forward to this. I will see what the reviews say. I will see what Nick says when he sees it.
You don't trust me on movies, it's fine.
I trust you on some movies.
Nick,
don't you remember when I watched Escape Room because you recommended it? And I liked it.
Then we'll always have
Escape Room.
Then we saw the trailer for Mortal Kombat Legends Cage Match, which apparently is an 80s riff on Johnny Cage focused animated movie.
Yes, that will have elements of other Mortal Kombat.
Other
go ahead.
Can we be honest? It looks awful.
This looks really terrible.
The animation looks like it's meant to evoke, it definitely is. There's an artist who did a lot of pinups in the era, like Patrick Nagel, I think it is.
Yep.
He had the kind of, was known for his sort of chic, stylish women, and he did illustrations for like Playboy and GQ and all of these things, and he was like in art galleries. But he kind of had something of those, like the shifting geometric shapes behind them, and everybody was like real chic looking and looked like they were going out to the club. Everybody looks like that in this, but like you said, it does not look... Like, the lines are all kind of cheesy, and not in necessarily, like...
Not in a fun way.
They're trying to do...
What was that, the movie that was, like, the David Hasselhoff did the song for, True Survivor?
That was Kung Fury.
They're trying to do a Kung Fury thing here, and it's not working.
And it's, just falls flat.
The poor man's Kung Fury.
I get what you're trying
Kung
to do.
Kung Fury wasn't that good.
But,
anyway.
When is Mortal Kombat ever going to rise to the...
Never.
The originals.
1995.
The 1995 original, which, by the way, is not a good movie.
No.
But it is the nexus of
video game quality.
It's the best Mortal Kombat that's ever been made. And it's probably never going to be topped.
No, and they're going to keep making them.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is that the movie kind of didn't play up the sort of violent nature of it. You know, there wasn't, like, people pulling out spines. Instead, they kind of made it, like, somewhere between, like, a old Ray Harryhausen movie with some stop-motion monsters and stuff like that. They definitely went ahead and followed the riff on Enter the Dragon, you know, the go to an island, have a fight, but also have side adventures. That is a good format, by the way. I want to go to an island and have side adventures and then have a few key fights.
And fight Goro.
and fight Goro. I will die. Goro. I will be the guy who dies. I will show you how tough Goro is.
And then the last trailer was maybe the weirdest one. It's called Nandor Fodor and the Talking Mongoose. It's based on a story that's sort of true. Basically,
is it a book?
I guess there was a weird family that claimed they had a talking mongoose, and this guy Nandor Fodor, played in this by
Simon Pegg,
goes out there to try to either prove or disprove. I couldn't quite.
Is he like an eccentric parapsychologist or skeptic?
That's what it's kind of like presented as.
But it's like it's trying to do quirky and weird, but I didn't think any of it was funny.
Right, but it's one of those things where I was like, it's possible that this could be good, but it doesn't translate well to a trailer format. Yeah. His voice, the way he was, his delivery reminded me of Christoph Waltz. Did y'all get that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's definitely a weird cadence.
Yeah, and it is. A very deliberate affectation. For good or bad, he does not sound like standard Simon Pegg.
No,
yeah.
And then they throw in, like, Minnie Driver as sort of his second in command or whatever. And a bunch of, like, really good character actors. So, I mean, it looks weird, but I'll probably check this one out.
Yeah. I will listen to see what Nick says about it.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be seeing this one unless I hear this really good thing.
There's also Neil Gaiman does a voice for...
He voices the mongoose.
Yeah, he voices the mongoose.
Well, you know, it's the part he was born to play.
Sure.
Classic English mongoose.
Yes, I have classic mongoose.
It's got to be an English mongoose. Classic English.
All right, we got a little bit of news out of San Diego that we haven't talked about yet.
Okay.
The big one, I think, and no pun intended, is the Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong miniseries.
Right. This is a comic miniseries, not cartoon or...
So are they all going to be fighting?
7-issue miniseries. It's by Brian Buccoletto. The art is by Christian Duce, who did the art on Batman Fortnite Zero Point. Okay. And that guy's going to be, in about 10 years, there's going to be a whole bunch of people that remember him as their favorite comic artist from the first comic.
It's true.
Those kids just got the skins off of that and didn't read it.
They sent a piece of art to Entertainment Weekly that shows Superman squaring off against Godzilla, which is a great piece of art.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, he's like flying at him, and it's a great sense of scale in it.
It's from the interior. Like, that is not a cover.
That's an actual interior page.
Yeah. And then there's a cover, there's a Jim Lee variant that shows a giant Pacific Rim-esque Batmac fighting Godzilla.
Okay.
I was opining that what I would like to see in this, that you could just use as kind of like to show how badass probably Kong and Godzilla are, is I would like to see some of DC's other kaiju, like Kemo and Titano, Starro, all the guys, Giganta.
This is out of continuity, because the Justice League, of course, is not currently in existence.
Right. Right.
But Buccoletto said that basically he's like, you know, classic team, Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Hawkgirl, that Supergirl is coming down because Superman is supposed to be going on his first vacation ever. And so Supergirl is going to temporarily join the Justice League. He also says you're going to see people from Gotham. You'll see some Titans. You'll see some auxiliary Justice League members.
Okay.
Cast is pretty big. Also said the other side of the battlefield, I'm not allowed to say which, but Kong and Godzilla are not the only two giant monsters they're going to face. So maybe they will bring in, like, Starro and some of the other ones.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was thinking, you know how, like, Kemo is a big old bag of chemicals outside of a building?
Yep.
I feel like if Godzilla lights that dude up, like, it's going to nuke a city.
Yeah.
King Ghidorah?
I feel like he could use, but that would be dope, like, if he used him as a weapon, like, you know, picked him up, chucked him at Ghidorah, set him off, and blows him to pieces.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
That'd be the hotness.
I'm looking forward to this. It sounds like a fun idea.
I'm glad that DC does these kind of crazy crossovers every once in a while.
Does Marvel do crossover stuff right now?
I mean, they did Fortnite, but they don't really, like, crossover, like... Batman Ninja Turtles.
And they haven't even done it with, like, the Aliens and Predator things
that
they
have. We're finally getting
now.
A Wolverine versus
they did
Predator.
Right. And they did do Conan in sort of. They had the Savage Avengers. Yeah. But it does seem like a weirdly high amount of missed opportunities.
Yeah.
So, there was an anime introduced, and normally I don't care about anime at all.
Yes.
But it's going to be from the creator of Cowboy Bebop, one of the few anime I really like, and the creator of John Wick, and the animated studio MAPPA, who have been doing Attack on Titan and Chainsaw Man. This is pretty much a best of collection of people. The series is titled Lazarus. Sorry, Greg Rucka. I just lost that title. And it's set in 2052. All is peaceful thanks to the creation of a new drug known as Hapuna, which has done away with illness and suffering in the world. The creator goes missing for 3 years before resurfacing, announcing that Hiputa will kill everyone who's taken in just 3 years. And the Lazarus group is assembled to find a way for humanity to survive, and they have a hard deadline to work with. That's a fun concept.
It is, but that also sounds anti-vax.
Oh, man, I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah, it's, like, I know it's, like, a big high-concept thing, but the drug that you take is going to secretly kill you, is certainly going to play into the hand of anti-vaxxers.
Oh, I hate that.
Dave, yeah, sorry. Now you've killed it. Sorry. Thank you.
You ruined it for me.
You know, it's anime, though, Randy, because so there's probably going to be some weird shit in there. It's like...
Also, there's ice skating.
But it's going to be like... but to survive, as long as you get to Mars and, you know, lasso one of the manta rays of Mars,
yes,
that's how people can survive it.
You turn into a giant monster.
Yes, and I was like, okay, anime.
Yeah.
There's probably going to be enough layers and maybe removed from the real world.
But yeah, I'll be curious. This is also going to be a lot of big fight scenes and action and that kind of thing. So we'll see what happens. And then the last bit of news we have is, two bits of news, actually. I don't know if you all don't know Driz Doordon from the D&D world. Apparently he has a daughter named Bree.
That must be the daughter of Catty Bree.
I would assume so.
It's his adoptive daughter? They weren't romantically linked, were they?
I think they've become romantically... He's still writing these.
I mean, I know there's like 50 Driz Doordon books.
Yeah, he's just... So.
Is she like a sister to him, or is that like his girlfriend eventually?
Well, girlfriend. That's, I mean, if they have a daughter together, I hope she's not a sister to him. Well,
I believe it's... Brunner Battlehammer's adoptive daughter.
Right.
And Dritz and her had a relationship that was on again, off again a lot, and I guess at some point became on again.
You know, it is scary when you have to go home to your potential dad of Brunner Battlehammer.
Yeah.
I feel like he's what would probably be one of those somewhat toxic dads who's...
That's not true. As portrayed, he's pretty nice.
Allegedly.
He took a half giant under his wing as a adoptive son. And befriended a drow.
Took a half giant?
Oh, but the other guy that's
Wolfgar?
Yeah. He was like.
Is he a half giant?
So this is not like an animated Viking series. This is a comic.
Yeah, this is a comic.
It's a webtoon. I don't know what webtoon is, I think.
What?
A series called Bree and the Borrowed Blade. She will borrow her father's iconic sword. I don't know if it's Icing Death or Twinkle.
It's Twinkle.
Of course it is.
This sounds potentially okay, but I also think people probably want Drizzt.
Yeah.
This is a little bit like doing an X-23 spinoff when there's been very few Wolverine comics.
So I would just like to mention that the writer is the known to the webtoon series Suitor Armor, while the artist is provided work for Dream Daddy, a dad-dating comic book.
I remember the existence of that.
So that's weird. That's a weird
thing.
It's
a bit of an unusual thing. What company is putting this out?
Webtoon.
Not the people who make the D&D comics, not IDW.
No.
Okay.
Although maybe IDW is the print version.
Well, we will keep an eye on it in all the Drizzt related news.
Yes. And then one last bit, Skybound did announce that they are going to be collecting the G.I. Joe and Marvel Transformers stuff.
Okay, cool, right. We know that, and people remember that the new Robert Kirkman comic, Void Rivals, was kind of a little secret stealth entry into upcoming Transformers and G.I. Joe new comics. They're definitely kind of doing a new approach to them that I think is broadly sounds like it's going to be worth looking at.
Well, I know we've been.
If you like those things.
We've been kind of frustrated that we were never able to get. Because there have been a lot of Transformers and G.I. Joe comics, but the Marvel ones were the best.
Right. Yeah. And it's not even close.
No. This is objectively true. If you think otherwise, you're wrong.
I don't even remember the last time the Marvel Transformers comic
it's been
was
a while.
In print at all.
IDW was doing some hardcovers, but it's been scattershot availability. So it is good. I kind of hope that they get everything. Like assuming that they paid the people who did it, the Dreamwave Transformers, and like I'd like to have all of that in print.
Yep. There's you know the original G.I. Joe. Like we're talking something that I would say for at least 60 to 80 issues. Was really pretty great.
Yep.
I would like to buy these. Because I don't think I own... I don't own any of the...
I bought all of it when IW was collecting it. So yeah, I had it all.
I did not.
So. I don't have the later ones. And even though the art got 90s and there got to be some weird, crazy stuff, I will occasionally, like, look up some scene on the internet and like, even sometimes scenes where I don't like the art, I'm like, oh man, but it still had that some pretty strong writing from Larry Hama.
Yeah,
and you know he was the secret ingredient. So having that collected, but also for those of you nostalgic for, you know, old Simon Furman Transformers, mm-hmm. I guess is going to have a lot of that, like that classic stuff. So that's cool. I'm glad they're doing that.
Yeah. All right. That will about wrap it up for news. We have a whole bunch of topics, but it's like we're running late today, and it's a longer podcast. Next week we're gonna have a whole bunch of topics.
I mean, we're gonna talk about Barbie, and I will talk about Oppenheimer. I don't know if anybody else will have seen it yet, but I'm gonna talk about it.
But maybe Nick will have.
Yeah, it's possible.
But we'll definitely talk about Barbie because Nick will have seen it at that point.
Yep, I'm seeing it tonight.
We'll talk about Justified.
Yep, I'll watch all the episodes.
Maybe some Futurama. Maybe Lioness, the new thing from Taylor Sheridan. Maybe a whole bunch of other stuff. But until that time,
yo Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.